are listening to Multimedia from the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. For many who own a home, it's tough, even in affordable places like Ohio. Part 1. Corinne, a real estate agent in Northeast Ohio. Corinne Bozen Grizel arrives with a thick pile of research, and she's flipping through the pages. This is an interesting view on how things have changed, the real estate agent promises. In 2016, she sold a house on West 65th Street in Cleveland for $60,000, she says. That same 1,200-square-foot home sold again in 2023 with what she deemed minimal improvements based on pictures online. It sold for, want to take a guess? The photographer on assignment guesses the price more than doubled to $135,000. She's low, really low. $265,000, Bozen Grizel reveals. In March of 2023, it closed for $265,000, a nearly 350% increase in price. The market is nuts, she says. People see they can sell, but who's going to be able to buy? The people who can afford it are not the people who need affordable housing. Homeownership in September 2023 was affordable in only 4 U.S. metro areas with populations of more than 500,000, per the Atlanta Fed's Home Ownership Affordability Monitor, which examines whether a household, be it a single person or multiple people, earning the median income for its area, can afford to own a home at the median price for that area. The 4 areas were Youngstown, Warren, Boardman, which straddles the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, Akron, Ohio, Des Moines and West Des Moines in Iowa, and St. Louis, an area also straddling 2 states, Missouri and Illinois. The rest of the more than 100 metro areas were unaffordable. Even when the 30-year mortgage rate was nearing 8%, the longer-term shortage of available housing meant less of a slowdown in market activity than may have been expected. And a housing supply shortfall kept rents and house prices high, Loretta J. Mester said in an October speech. Mester, the chief executive officer at the Cleveland Fed, is one of the presidents of the 12 independent regional reserve banks that comprise the U.S. Central Bank. She is also a participant on the Federal Open Market Committee, the entity that determines the country's monetary policy that has raised interest rates 11 times since 2022 to combat high inflation. Seated this October day inside another house in Cleveland, Ohio, one that Bozen Grizel's client just sold for $220,000, considered to be affordable based on averages in the community, she is paging through the residential listings and comp sales again. It's so subjective, she says. What's affordable to you might not be affordable to someone else. And if you're trying to find a house whose mortgage is $1,000 a month, you're going to have a hard time. Houses under $105,000, with a down payment ranging from 3.5% to 20%, would put one's mortgage payment at about that figure, $1,000 a month. And in the dozens of pages on the table in this little dining room, she finds one house at that price. It's in Berea, a Cleveland suburb and a college town. Needs a ton of repairs, she says, and comes with a restriction that the buyer may not rent it. Still, it's selling. She's pretty sure the property is under contract. It remains a seller's market, she says, noting, many contracts I've written for buyers have gone $20,000 over list price, and they still didn't get the house. So she and others see a lot more young people living with their parents for longer, and even separate families joining forces to buy single-family homes. The consequences of fewer people's being able to buy affordable houses, commonly defined as costing someone no more than 30% of their gross income, reach well beyond the people who feel left out of the housing market, observers say. Why does affordable homeownership matter? Robbie K. Suggs, president and chief executive officer for Warsaw Federal Savings and Loan in Cincinnati, and a current member of the Cleveland Fed's Community Advisory Council, answered, "It should matter to everyone. It's better for the economy to have more homeowners. It's better for our schools. It's better for our cities and towns, whether they be urban or rural. It hurts our communities when people can't purchase homes. People who purchase homes pay property taxes, and that increases the wealth for the city or county." Ken Ehlers, executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Southeast Ohio in Millfield, and a current member of the Cleveland Fed's Community Advisory Council, said, "Housing is the epicenter of life. Everything revolves around where we live and where we put our heads down at night. It's our safe space. It's our private place. And that place needs to be healthy, not only for ourselves, but also for our children. If it's not, physical and mental health suffer. At some point, housing changed from a basic essential function of one's life to an investment. It can still be an investment, but it also needs to be a basic right. The lack of affordable housing has a financial impact on society. For example, increased hospital bills for treating conditions such as lead poisoning and asthma due to mold. There's also the necessity to increase subsidization of food programs for people who are paying high rents and high mortgages. When people are paying the latter, they have less money for food and medication. It affects a child's ability to succeed educationally. It's very hard to study when you've got a drip from a roof leak hitting a 5-gallon bucket, or when your home isn't heated. To sum it up, we're going to pay for housing one way or another. The price we pay in other services is due in part to not having invested in housing. Kevin J. Nowak, President and Chief Executive Officer at CHN Housing Partners in Cleveland, responded, "Look at the ability to mortgage the equity in one's home. Often that equity is used to help pay for education or to invest initial capital in a small business. If you do not have wealthy friends, traditionally, the way to generate cash for a small business is your home. One of the ways for children across the board, but particularly from blue-collar and low-income families, to go to college is their parents mortgaging their homes. There's a direct connection between people's level of education and their participation in the economy. Those with more education tend to have greater opportunities. There's also a direct connection between the number of small businesses you're able to generate and a functioning economy. Home ownership has been a cornerstone to funding both." Part 2. Lauren, a homeowner in Cleveland. Lauren Camacci calls herself a living, breathing example of the way parents' homeownership can financially benefit their child. One of the only reasons she was able to buy her house in 2022 is because her parents, bolstered by intergenerational wealth she says is rooted in homeownership, let her use the wedding fund they'd saved for a down payment. "A house instead of a spouse," she quips. "My accountant father basically fainted in happiness," she jokes. So while she's moved in and was having her home's foundation shored up following the discovery of significant issues beneath the back deck, people she knows, even those with better-paying jobs than her B2B content writer role, are losing houses to more competitive bids or halting their home searches. "My friends who are expecting a child wanted to be in a different home before birth," Camacci says. "They put bids in on 50 houses in Columbus, Ohio. Nothing. The houses all went to cash buyers. Most of my friends are not homeowners," adds the 34-year-old. "The ones that are purchased way before the pandemic. The ones who are still renting, if they looked for a home to buy, they had to stop looking. Nothing was affordable, and things were going so fast. This was a 24-hour deal. It was that fast." This refers to the Cleveland home Camacci toured even before pictures of its interior were online, and that she snapped up for $186,000, $1,000 more than list price, using a loan borrowed at a lucky 5.375% interest rate. "I don't take for granted that my family circumstances and generational wealth made it possible," she says. "My great-grandpa came here with a couple bucks in his pocket when he was 15. He became a steelworker, and because he and his family were white, they owned homes. And because they owned homes, they were able to gift their children inheritances, down payments, things that so many other people don't have access to." Camacci's house and its Brooklyn Center neighborhood have their drawbacks. It's located in a food desert, she says, and she doesn't feel safe going on walks like she used to around her apartment building. But homeownership's upsides more than make up for its downsides, and she's happy she bought. "Hallelujah, the parking," she says, noting she used to pay $135 a month to park in her apartments. "Now, for the first time as an adult, she's parking in a garage. I love it. I really like not having to scrape snow and ice off my car. I enjoy the privacy, and I enjoy that the money I pay remains mine. I can borrow against my house later. The people she knows who failed to buy feel jaded, she says. The last 20 years have seen unprecedented volatility in the housing market and record-breaking house price increases, said a speaker during the Federal Reserve's November forum, Renting, Owning, and Implications for the Racial Wealth Gap, sharing a chart that captures house price changes back to 1890. Carolina Reed from the University of California, Berkeley said, "You can see the early volatility of an unregulated housing market at the turn of the 19th century, and then the impact of the Great Depression. What's remarkable to me is that the subsequent 50 years were characterized by relatively consistent price stability. That fundamentally changes in the early 2000s, first with a subprime boom, then the foreclosure crisis, and then the recovery starting around 2013. Renters and homeowners are experiencing a very different market than households in the 1950s and 60s, with significant implications for both access and wealth building. There are multiple reasons why house prices are so much higher now compared to even 5 years ago, experts say, and those prices are only one reason so many people can't afford to buy. How has the affordable homeownership market changed in recent years, and why? Matt Klesta, senior policy analyst at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, responded, "Twice a year, we survey organizations that serve low and moderate income communities, and we ask them about the availability of affordable housing. Over the past few surveys, it's been at its lowest levels. 67% of respondents in September 2023 said the availability of affordable housing decreased, up from 52% who said so in our first survey in March 2018. It's a long-standing problem for the region we study and serve, Ohio, western Pennsylvania, the northern panhandle of West Virginia, and eastern Kentucky. One reason is the impact of investors. While large institutional investors are more active in the Sun Belt and the American West, there are a lot of smaller investors in our region, and the concern is that they're buying up homes that need work, that might be good homes for first-time homebuyers. A lot of times, they turn these into rentals. It's not necessarily a bad thing if they're flipping and improving homes or turning them into rentals, but the issue is they're competing potentially with first-time homebuyers and offering to buy with cash. That makes the investors a surer deal." A guest blogger also emphasized the impact of investors, specifically in Columbus, Ohio, which in 2022 was one of the nation's 10 most popular metro areas for investors. Ken Ehlers, executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Southeast Ohio in Millfield, said, "The need for affordable housing is significant right now, and any Habitat organization would tell you that. Any affordable housing provider would tell you that. We have seen the request for Habitat services quadruple since 2020, and we are also getting requests for assistance from middle-income families because they cannot afford what is available right now. Houses that were priced between $100,000 and $200,000 don't exist anymore. They're either already purchased, and the people who live in them don't want to sell because of interest rates, or the house was purchased by an investor to become a rental. What's left for the most part are homes that need significant repair in order to pass a Federal Housing Administration, FHA, inspection to qualify for an FHA loan. People either have to pay all cash for property, or they have to find a way to finance something north of $175,000. When your median income is $45,000 a year, and you have a car loan and student loan debt on top of that, that's a struggle. We also have not been building housing stock at the level necessary. If I'm a contractor, and I have a choice between building a $200,000 house and a $600,000 house, I'm going to build the latter because I'm going to make more profit. And that's perfectly justifiable. There's a stigma against career center education and construction work that has been ingrained in people's minds, so not enough skilled workers have entered the workforce. Plus, the 2008 financial crisis wiped out a lot of contractors, and they never went back. There are not enough builders now. Stefan Whitaker, a senior policy economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, responded, "During the pandemic, people were reevaluating where they wanted to be. And there was a very pronounced acceleration of movement out of dense urban neighborhoods where people are more likely to rent. There's been a flow of 800,000 more than you'd expect, and a lot of those people were making the transition to homeownership and competing for houses on the market at that time. Later in 2022, and then in 2023, as the Federal Reserve raised interest rates to combat inflation, the housing inventory fell very dramatically because of the lock-in. People saying, I have a mortgage at 3%, and if I move, I'd have to get a mortgage at 7% or higher. That discourages people from putting their houses on the market. And then people who do need to move need to compete for limited inventory. That keeps prices up. During the pandemic, hundreds of thousands of people left the most expensive metros, such as San Francisco, New York, and Seattle, and headed to moderate-cost places, such as Dallas, Atlanta, and Nashville. If people owned a home in a high-cost area, they may have had a lot of equity, which they can use to be in stronger positions, offering more for houses. And that pushes up prices too. Plus, there is some research evidence that suggests that if someone comes from a region where the median house costs $600,000 and they arrive in a place where it's $250,000, they're not going to negotiate as hard to get the price down by $10,000 or $20,000. Their ideas of what a house is worth are influenced by their previous neighborhood, and they already feel like they are getting a great deal. The recent surge in demand could appear in other market segments, even though the shift was concentrated in people with remote work occupations, which are generally higher income. Say, a lot of these people are going out and buying $200,000 houses in suburbs. Others, who may have bid on those houses in the past, may now be looking at $150,000 houses, and so on and so forth. The shift in each influences the adjacent segment of the market, and you can find those impacts in affordable housing. Corinne Bozen-Grizel, a real estate agent in Northeast Ohio, responded, "One challenge is interest rates, certainly. A person who could afford a $250,000 house last year when the rates were 3% may not be able to afford a house that's more than $125,000. And there aren't many of those houses out there. And for someone dependent on the Federal Housing Administration, FHA, to guarantee their mortgage, it's difficult. In doing my research on houses under the $105,000 mark, most were not available under FHA. The homes had to be bought with cash or a conventional mortgage. Conventional finance requirements are much different than FHA's, for which a borrower's debt-to-income ratio can be higher and the down payment lower. People who are selling at these more affordable prices are targeting investors, often from out of town. They're not targeting young couples who want a foothold in the American dream. It's really sad. When you offer homes that are affordable, but not to the community that needs them to be affordable, you're not helping the community." Part 3. Robbie, a banker in Cincinnati. The man came in with his daughter to apply for a loan, Robbie K. Suggs remembers. He had found a house he wanted to be his. Even after the man, a black veteran, qualified for a mortgage, he expressed disbelief. "You're not going to give me this loan," she remembers him saying, probably 25 years ago. "You qualified," she corrected him. "Unless you decide not to buy it, you close." When the deal went through and the house was his and he opened the door, he was overcome, said Suggs, who was with him. He sat in his eating kitchen and cried. The man had just bought his first home and he was 90 years old. He was overjoyed, said Suggs, then a mortgage lender in Cincinnati and today president and CEO of Warsaw Federal Savings and Loan, which recently became Ohio's second minority depository institution. "I was proud we were able to do it, and excited because he didn't think it would ever happen." She pauses, choked up. "I felt good about being able to help him. He had been told no before, and it made me feel like, man, this is what it's about. I helped someone achieve a lifelong dream." For some clients she served, the game-changing help she provided took the form of advising folks how to improve their credit, rather than leaving an answer at no. "It is personal to me," she says. "When I started as a mortgage lender, my niche became first-time homebuyers. I got to see that struggle, and I saw that generally people of color have a harder time purchasing homes. That generational wealth isn't there as often," she says, and they don't have family leave a home to them or help with a down payment as often as their white counterparts. I read some statistics about how much earlier a white person is able to purchase a home than a person of color is. There are 10 years of wealth building lost because people of color aren't able to buy homes as early. We can decrease that wealth gap one person at a time. The Cleveland Fed reported in 2021 that although black homeownership rose between 2018 and 2021 in seven counties across Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky, the gap remained wide between the black homeownership rate, 35%, and the non-black homeownership rate, 66%. The bank has twice reported mortgage lending trends, most recently during the COVID-19 pandemic when interest rates hit record lows, and previously after the Great Recession. Nationally, the shares of black and Latinx homebuyers with lower incomes have declined in recent years, as has the share of Federal Housing Administration, FHA, borrowers. And these numbers and others suggest that the likelihood of further reducing the racial homeownership gap is more challenging in the current market, said Junhong Choi with the Urban Institute's Housing Finance Policy Center. Choi spoke in November during the last of three housing affordability-centered conversations hosted this fall by the Federal Reserve Community Development Research Seminar Series. Another researcher during that same session asserted that homeownership is critical to building wealth in America, but is not necessarily a path to closing the wealth gap. A chart shared by Reed from the University of California, Berkeley, shows average home equity, the difference between the value of the home and the size of the mortgage, for different households over time. The home equity gap between white and black households was $88,000 in 1989. In 2019, it was $135,000. These disparities are a direct result of the age when people bought their home, when and where they bought their home, as well as disparities in the pricing of credit and in appraisals. These factors all converge to preserve, and in some cases, widen the wealth gap. What does this all mean for policy? I think it means we need to pay attention to both goals, expanding access to home ownership, as well as thinking creatively about how we can close the wealth gap. They are not the same. For its part, Two Branch Warsaw Federal is planning listening sessions with community members to ask what they need. How can we make it easier for older folks to stay in their homes, Sugg says. How can we assist homeowners in some of the things they need to do? We have to be vigilant and more innovative in the things we are doing. I want us at Warsaw to provide more flexible products that may not be mainstream, to be more helpful to our clients. Small-dollar mortgages, commonly defined as loans of $100,000 or less, are even more scarce than the affordable homes they are used to purchase, wrote one Cleveland Fed Community Development Outreach Manager in 2023. This is an especially unfortunate situation for lower-income households for whom it is not unusual to pay more to rent than they would to own a home if they were able to secure a small-dollar mortgage, author Bonnie S. Blankenship wrote. Community contacts are telling the Cleveland Fed that responding better to people's financing needs is one step needed to advance people's ability to access affordable homeownership. The Federal Reserve is responsible for supervising banks, along with other federal agencies, such as the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, that watch over institutions the Fed doesn't. In examining banks' compliance with the Community Reinvestment Act, which encourages banks to expand access to credit services in low- and moderate-income communities and other high-need areas, bank examiners interview contacts in communities the banks serve about local community development opportunities and the bank's performance. In 2023, several contacts asserted that banks need to offer alternative types of lending to low- and moderate-income people to increase their access to financing. Many of the lending requirements immediately eliminate the possibility of providing financing to an LMI individual in search of housing, said one nonprofit leader in Louisville, who estimated more than 31,000 affordable housing units are needed to address that Kentucky city's affordable housing crisis. Housing market observers see people opening doors to homeownership in other ways, too. What is being done locally to help increase access to affordable housing? Ken Ehlers, executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Southeast Ohio in Millfield, said, Some townships and counties are developing housing plans and doing housing studies, looking at housing holistically. Those are things I was not seeing 4 or 5 years ago. And it's pretty powerful when a place can do a study and say they see 1,500 needed units. That's ammunition for change. Solving for this is going to take private and public investment. Private investment might be, we're going to build the units. And public might involve giving developers or homeowners tax abatements and adjusting zoning regulations to allow the building of housing that otherwise wouldn't conform because the need for housing is so great. We've also worked with all sorts of municipalities in waiving or discounting tap fees, which are charged to developers for the privilege to tap into water and sewer. The other thing that needs to be looked at broadly is increasing some sort of subsidization to build affordable housing. The state has passed some affordable homeownership tax credit opportunities through the Ohio General Assembly that are getting ready to be implemented. Those investments need to continue past just the 2-year budget cycle. One of the more innovative solutions I see is modular home construction taking off and becoming more a common thing. These houses, which cost less, can usually be pre-assembled and moved onto a foundation. They're about 85% complete when they hit a person's lot, meaning fewer builders necessary to generate more housing. It's pretty much happening everywhere. They arrive unbuilt, and workers come in and finish them and put in utilities. Some think they're lower quality, but they're not. Robbie K. Suggs, president and CEO for Warsaw Federal Savings and Loan in Cincinnati, said, "The city of Cincinnati has really stepped up to provide additional funding to support affordable housing. Hamilton County has provided funding as well, and there are more funds than ever before to fill the gaps for affordable housing development. The municipal bodies are putting the money into the hands of Cincinnati Development Fund, a community development financial institution, or CDFI, to help it bridge the gap between what it costs to build and what the CDFI has in funds. Our port did something amazing, too, to repurpose the housing stock we already have. A couple years ago, it purchased a block of roughly 200 single-family dwellings from an out-of-town investor. The port and the nonprofit Homesteading and Urban Redevelopment Corporation are remodeling them to enhance their safety, and the people who are renting are being given the opportunity to purchase these homes. It is a unique and innovative way to get this work done. This is not the space the port usually works in, but they saw this need, and they felt they needed to take these properties and upgrade the lives of people living in them. Could we start something that does that all the time? Purchase properties from out-of-state investors, rehab them, and put them out for homeownership. Finding ways to help people stay in their affordable homes is important too. People have lost their homes because of property tax and code violations. For example, when people who have lived in homes for a long time don't have the money to do exterior maintenance. In Cincinnati, we have the homestead exemption that affords people of a certain age and income reduced property taxes. That's very helpful for people with fixed incomes currently in homes, and a population that gets preyed upon by investors who say they'll buy their houses and make improvements. And a lot of times, that turns out to be a scam, and they've lost their wealth-building vehicle. Kevin J. Nowak, president and CEO of CHN Housing Partners in Cleveland, responded, "Practitioners are working across products, education, and inventory. On the product side, it's about affordable and flexible mortgages, home repair loans, and down payment assistance. Inspired by HomeWise in New Mexico, we created our Home Ownership Center, which delivers traditional homebuyer education and helps people build financial capabilities, such as putting away savings and cleaning up debt. We thought we would have 400 people in our Home Ownership Center in 2023. Since January, we have had more than 1,000 people. On the inventory side, we're producing new affordable units, and also acquiring and preserving existing homes that otherwise fall into the hands of investors. What you often see in housing is the home ownership camp and the rental camp. We need both. Sometimes people want or need to be a renter. For some extremely low-income residents, renting is probably the better option for them. And for some seniors, they would prefer to live independently in a rental property. That's missed sometimes. We don't want Ms. Smith to leave her home. What if she wants to? It helps to meet people where they are, and it takes public-private partnership for this to work. I give a shout-out to legislators and our governor. There's a state housing tax credit to address some of the housing need on the rental side, the single-family housing tax credit program to build homes in our communities, and Welcome Home Ohio, homebuyer incentives. We need continued investment at the state and local levels. Our mortgage market is not working for everybody. Our housing market is not working for everybody. There will be homes built in Central Ohio for employees of Intel, folks earning $130,000 to $170,000 a year, all day long. But that is just one small part of the economy. How about the maintenance workers, the gas station attendants, the public employees? The market isn't taking care of them itself. Part 4. Stefan, an economist in Cleveland. Even when Stefan Whitaker's parents were together, they couldn't afford to buy a house because interest rates in the early 1980s reached a peak they never had before and haven't since. The benchmark interest rate in the United States, which in November of 2023 was 5.25% to 5.5%, was 20% in March 1980. After his parents split, Whitaker's mom sought the lowest cost rentals available because it's what she could afford. They lived in five houses between 1984 and 1987, and twice they moved because landlords sold the properties. The second time it happened, the landlord gave them 30 days to move. "We couldn't find anything we could afford until we had only 3 days left," says Whitaker, a senior policy economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. "I remember sitting at the kitchen table, trying to do my homework, and thinking about whether I would have anywhere to sit the next week. I remember being scared. I was 9 years old, and I didn't understand much about the finances of a household, but I understood enough to know we didn't have a place to live. Finally, something cheap enough appeared in the classifieds, and the family moved that weekend." The topic of affordable homeownership is personal to Whitaker. During the pandemic, he studied where people were moving, and during the foreclosure crisis, he studied tax-delinquent, foreclosed, and abandoned properties. "I sympathize and understand what people are feeling when they're really struggling to find a place to live," he says. America's high-cost housing markets face different problems than do Ohio and parts of the surrounding states, he says, the latter the region the Cleveland Fed serves. "People are willing to pay a lot to live there," he says, of places such as the East and West Coasts. "Property owners can count on being able to sell their property and recover what they invest in it. Even small houses on small lots usually sell for more than $500,000. It's hard for people with low or moderate incomes to come up with a down payment and pay interest on that large mortgage balance every month." "Our challenge here is different," Whitaker adds. "There are homes that appear affordable in our region, with list prices under $100,000. However, if a house costs, say, $75,000, and it has a foundation problem that would cost $25,000 to fix, it's hard to justify paying $100,000 for a house that, after that repair, could be sold for only $75,000. In many cases, owners opt to let the house deteriorate, and eventually the homes are condemned and demolished. There are thousands of vacant lots in the centers of our metro areas because this scenario has played out repeatedly for decades. Rather than having a high purchase price as on the coasts, the most affordable homes in low-cost regions come with the risk that they will lose their value," he says. "The high-cost and low-cost areas have this in common, though. I'm not aware of any region in the country, really, where investors without a significant affordable housing subsidy are building housing that you would call affordable," Whitaker says. "If developers aren't intentionally keeping the price down, they are probably going to build units that low and moderate income households cannot afford." There's literature in economics that argues that building affordable housing is not the thing to do, notes Laura Lowenstein, a Cleveland Fed research economist who studied national housing trends for a decade. Instead, some push that building any housing should be the goal, so long as there's more of it, and market-rate housing built a while ago will decline in value and become affordable. Some debate, too, whether money spent to build affordable housing could be spent in better ways. there may be enough housing in an area to house people, and maybe some people can't afford it. And maybe the answer is not to build more affordable housing, Lowenstein says. Maybe what people need is assistance paying for the housing that exists. Whitaker raises another question related to resources. Many local policies, such as zoning and minimum lot sizes, aim to protect homeowners' wealth. But that's inseparable from keeping the prices of their homes high. Other policies and programs then try to boost people up to reach homeownership at those prices, or bring down prices for specific properties. Periodically, he says, we need to reevaluate whether it is the best use of resources to subsidize housing versus approaches that would raise people's incomes so they could afford housing. Do you want to lower costs or focus on raising incomes so people can afford everything they need, he says. The answers matter to the Federal Reserve, which is mandated by Congress to pursue the economic goals of price stability and maximum employment. It's hard for people to maintain employment if they don't have stable housing, says Matt Klesta, senior policy analyst with the Cleveland Fed's Community Development Department, whose recent report found that floods exacerbate affordable housing shortages. Where do we go from here? Kevin J. Nowak, president and CEO of CHN Housing Partners in Cleveland, said, I think we're in the new norm for a while. I don't think it's forever. But I do think we'll be working through this acute homeownership issue for 3 to 5 years. We have had a major adjustment in interest rates that was a long time coming. We have inflation still where we don't want it to be, and people are feeling it. One interesting piece of the puzzle will be the investor market. A lot of investors were buying properties with debt that carried a 5 to 7 year bridge period, and those will start coming due. Those purchases worked when you had rates in the 4s and 5s. They do not work when you have mortgage rates in the 7s and 8s. I think there will be a correction in that investor market, meaning those who bought at a lower interest rate and try to refinance out will have great difficulty doing it. That could be an opportunity to bring the properties they own back into the home ownership space. Robbie K. Suggs, president and CEO of Warsaw Federal Savings and Loan in Cincinnati, responded, I feel we are destined to be in this space for the foreseeable future. We have more people trying to purchase homes, and I don't think we can catch up. Funds for building come in from different sources, and it takes a while to apply and get the funds to use, so it's taking so long to get units online for people to purchase. Things could get better, but I don't think we're ever going to be at a place where the inventory is there for everyone who wants a home. Ken Ehlers, executive director at Habitat for Humanity of Southeast Ohio in Millfield, said, the answer to that question depends on what we as a society decide to do. If we make a major investment in housing, we can get back to where affordable housing is attainable for everyone. If we don't, if this just becomes the hot discussion topic, then we could be in trouble. Part 5. Kari, a homeowner in Berea. Kari Joyner made compromises when he bought his house in January 2022 for less than $200,000. In a perfect world, he says he would have ended up with a newer house that required fewer repairs and came with newer appliances, but radiator heating. But here he is, settling in Berea, Ohio, where contractors are hard at work on his new house. At the time Joyner house hunted, mortgage rates were low, and there was no shortage of open houses taken off the market in their first days. Joyner, a professional cellist, was outbid a handful of times by buyers offering cash and waiving inspections. He was unwilling to do the latter. In the end, he saw probably 45 houses before he made a 3-bedroom, 2-bath his first home purchase. Now he is ripping up older carpeting and painting surfaces while contractors are working on the home's basement and roof. There was something about it that drew me to it, he says of his house, citing its ample yard, the quiet street, and the windows that let in welcome light. The house has good structure, good bones. I could tell it had been kept up. He never would have been able to buy a house in his native Atlanta for less than $200,000, Joyner says. He attributes his success, despite this housing market, to sheer luck, the compromises he was willing to make, his family and friends, who advised him on the overwhelming amount of paperwork involved with buying a home, such as insurance and buyer's agreements, and the way he saved for a decade to free himself from the headaches of roommates, parking, and pests in New York City rentals. To the contrary, more and more people over the past 5 years have been telling staff at CHN Housing Partners in Cleveland they don't know if they want to be homeowners, says Kevin J. Nowak, president and CEO. For decades, people understood homeownership as the next step, he says. It was so much the end game. People are not believing they can attain the American dream to own a home. And when we move away from the belief that we can continue to grow our family's wealth, that we can help provide a better life for our kids, there's a fundamental breakdown in the fabric of society and what has made America, America. It's been a greater challenge for us to show people the value of homeownership. What then do CHN staffers say? We tell them homeownership brings the ability to generate assets and build wealth, to break intergenerational cycles of poverty, says Nowak, whose organization has originated since 2021 roughly 100 Believe mortgages, loans available to homebuyers who complete homebuyer classes prior to closing. 96% of CHN Housing Believe mortgage borrowers are Black and Latinx, and about 50% are female-led households. CHN has recorded zero delinquencies on these mortgages. A number of the borrowers are tenants who bought the houses their landlords wanted to sell. It's how I'm here today, Nowak says, standing this October day outside two affordable houses built and owned by the organization he's led since 2016. He's referring to his being the first in his family to go to college, thanks to his parents using equity in their Detroit home. He still visits that affordable 1,000-square-foot ranch his late father impeccably maintained. It looks almost the same, he says, except the basketball hoop is down. The neighbors there were and remain family. I have 100 different aunties and uncles who aren't related to me there to this day, he says with a smile. Homeownership, it's so much more than having a place to live. For more on Lauren's and Kari's journeys to homeownership and a list of resources for people seeking to buy and maintain houses, see this article's conclusion. Thank you for listening to this multimedia from the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. This story was reported and written by Michelle Park-Lazette, photography and video by Emily Kalina, design by Greg Johnson. The audio version is narrated by Emily Kalina and produced by Tony Bialowis and Allison Sakawi.